What I would like to do now is give this, give the presiding of this general session over to our second vice president. Give a warm round of applause for Roger Peterson.
Hello, everyone. I get to preside over part of a session today, I think. But that's okay. That's fine. I won't let it get to me, you know.
You can preside over that part, too.
Our first speaker today happens to be a person that I've met before. At a little celebration, sort of a housewarming, as I recall it was, at the home of Jeremy Johansson, the member of our technical operation group. Stephen Beard is a person with a disability, and he is in the real estate business, and he has made his business to put the two things together and be kind of an advocate in the real estate business for folks with disabilities. And he's going to tell us how people with disabilities can be homeowners and how you can be a homeowner if you're in a Section 8 home and things like that. So he's from San Leandro, I think, and he's a member of a real estate firm in Berkeley. And let's all give a hand for Stephen Beard.
Thank you so much, Roger. I was just, when I looked over and saw you, I remembered that party for Jeremy and meeting you there. Actually, it's Richmond, but that's okay. They're both beautiful communities in the East Bay. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to come and speak with you. What I'm going to be sharing with you is an abbreviated version of a presentation that I do at my own seminars that I hold throughout the East Bay around home ownership and affordable and accessible home ownership for people with disabilities. And so it's abbreviated, so there may be questions, and whatever the time allows, I'll be happy to answer questions at the end. So basically, the first thing I want to share with everybody is that disability is not a barrier to home ownership. The ability to own your own home here in California with a disability depends on five key components. One, your ability to save money. Two, your ability to manage a budget. Three, your ability to manage debt. Four, your ability to tap into special programs. And five, your ability to be flexible. And I'm going to touch on all of those things. One of the things that happens when I meet with people is they think that it's sort of out of their control. You know, we've got all these other people buying homes or selling homes, and it's this big market. It's all very overwhelming. But you actually control more than you may think you do as a potential home buyer dealing with disability. First of all, I always have a conversation with people about making the rent versus own decision. And I'm not going to have time to go into some of the parameters around that, but suffice to say that for a number of reasons, renting is not as advantageous for many people as owning is. There are tax disadvantages and there are control disadvantages. And so deciding whether or not renting or owning is the better way for you to go is a longer discussion, but that's certainly one factor that you control. You get to make that decision. You get to decide where you live, how much you need to save, how to manage your money, and who you're going to work with to help you achieve this goal. So I want to talk a little bit about saving money. Everyone understands that if they want to be a homeowner, they need to save money. But it's easy to understand the importance of it, but it's hard to actually do it. And so just three ideas I'm going to bounce forward very quickly. One, if you are working and earning income through an employer, they can divert a portion of each of your paychecks into a special savings account so that over a year or two or even 3 years, you could save several hundred or even several thousand dollars through direct deposit of money into a special savings account you set up for yourself. So that's one way that we can make saving less painful. on a tight budget. The second thing is something called individual development accounts. These are called IDAs, and there are some nonprofit organizations over the years that have been able to offer these shared savings plans that are exempt from any restrictions imposed by collecting government benefits, which I'm going to get into a little bit more later. And then finally, in California, you can buy a home with gifted funds. So a family member can provide you with money that they have to sign an affidavit saying they don't expect to get it paid back, a gift, and that can help you with a down payment as well. And I'm going to show how all three of those things, each or in a combination, can make the issue of saving more manageable. Another thing that you control is your income and your cash flow. A couple of things I want to point out about that. Obviously, the income you bring in, whether it's from benefits or from a job, determines how much of a monthly payment you could afford for a mortgage. But if you can afford to spend $800 to $1,200 right now for rent, then you probably can afford to spend that much on a mortgage. When lenders calculate how much you can have for a mortgage, including any ancillary costs such as property taxes or home insurance, they don't want that cost to be more than about 45% of your monthly income. So let's suppose you're on SSI and you're collecting $800 a month. The maximum payment that you would be able to possibly get under the best circumstances in a mortgage could not exceed $400, $375, $400, which is an awfully small mortgage that wouldn't allow you to buy anything. But that's the calculation. 45% is pretty much where it tops out. You can get 50% under certain circumstances with certain lenders. Another thing to keep in mind is that if you are on a benefit program like SSI or SSDI, lenders will adjust your income upwards by 25%. And the reason they do that is because that income is not taxable income like from a job. So they mark it up as a consideration of what you can afford for a monthly payment. So give an example. Suppose you're collecting $2,000 a month SSDI, then they would mark that up to $2,500, if I'm doing my math in my head right. 20% would be $2,500, right? So anyway, so it really, that also is, and so if you're earning income from a job, that doesn't get marked up that way. And I'm going to talk more about Section 8 later, but if you're on Section 8, you certainly don't need anywhere near as much income to make it work in California. So I talked about choosing your team. Another thing you choose is who you're going to work with. And I want to briefly touch on the difference between a regular real estate agent and what I like to call an accessibility specialist. So two big things there. Your typical real estate agent is going to operate at their speed, and an accessibility specialist should be operating at your speed and your pace. I've worked with a lot of clients over the years who've had MS or multiple chemical sensitivities or visual impairment, and it has been my experience that I have to be very sensitive to the pace at which folks evaluate the homes I show them and pace at which they digest information I share about writing offers and about determining a negotiation strategy and all that stuff. A lot of agents out there, very successful agents, are trying to make the maximum amount of money in the shortest amount of time. That doesn't mean they don't serve their clients well, but it means they operate at a certain pace when they're working with buyers because they're primarily listing homes, they're not primarily working with buyers. And so the focus is less on a sensitivity to the needs of the pacing of the client. Another thing I want to talk about in terms of two types of realtors is your typical agent expects you to determine how properties meet your accessibility needs. An accessibility specialist should be previewing properties for you and determining how the accessibility of the house or the property meets your needs through a proper assessment of what your needs are. Finally, a typical agent is not knowledgeable about services to the disability community, and you really want your real estate agent that's helping you with probably the biggest purchase of your life to have some concept of what's going on in the disability community in terms of resources, but also to know the difference between SSI and SSDI and to understand some of the what Medi-Cal is, for example, and Medicare and those types of things. So one of the things that I like to stress when I talk to people is that every client's needs are unique. when I work with two clients, for example, who are visually impaired, I'm going to be asking them a lot of questions about what sight they have, if any, how they perceive light, and how those things impact the way they want to live in their homes. So we customize, when we work with clients, we customize the home search to meet the needs of the unique life circumstance of the person we're working with. Okay. There are basically three types of loans out there right now that are in the market right now. And I say right now because this stuff changes in 6 months. It might be a different story. Right now, there are three. There is a FHA loan, which is probably very well known. It's Federal Housing Administration, FHA. And it is a 3.5% down product. So you only, if you buy a $100,000 property, you only need to bring $3,500 to the table. And they also offer a construction variant called a 203K, which means if the house costs $100,000, they might lend you $120,000, and the extra $20,000 goes to make the home work. That's called a 203K. So this is a very popular loan. It is popular because it is no risk for banks to offer it because it's an insured loan. The banks are insured against their losses by the federal government. The second type of loan that's available that I talk about is VA loans. Anyone who is a veteran can get a loan through the VA if they're 100% service-connected disabled, and it's 0% down. It's the only 0% down product I think is out there anymore. And then finally, we have conventional loans, which are non-governmental loans, and those are typically at least 5% down, sometimes 20% down. So to give you an example, on a $100,000 property, that's anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 of cash to get into one of those loans. Conventional loans are better in my market of the Bay Area right now because they typically have lower carrying costs than do the FHA loans, and they're better perceived by sellers in a market I'm in, which is very competitive. All right, down payment. So I talked to you about saving being difficult. There are a number of strategies we use to help our clients reduce the amount of money that they need to have. So you may remember I said $100,000 property, you need $3,500. Well, not necessarily. In certain cities, they offer down payment assistance programs. So right now, there's a $20,000 program called CityLift that is offered in 9 Bay Area counties that is $20,000 towards towards the down payment. That's one program. The state of California has a 3% loan right now, where if you've got this FHA where you're putting in 3.5%, you actually only have to put in 0.5%. So that $3,500 just went to $500. And then if you've got a gift from a family member of $500 or $1,000, you essentially could have 0% down out of your own pocket. That's pretty important for people who are on SSI, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I want to talk about government benefits. There is no government benefit. Let me rephrase. No government benefit may be taken away from you because you buy and own your own home. Let me say that again. Just because you're on SSI or SSDI, you aren't, or Medi-Cal, they can't take those benefits away from you because you buy a home. However, Medi-Cal and SSI have asset limits associated with them, how much you can have the bank account at the beginning of the month. If you're single, it's $2,000. If you're married, it's $3,000. So that inhibits your ability to save money to buy a home. I mean, if you want to save $20,000 to buy a home and you're on Medi-Cal, even without SSI, you're only allowed to have $2,000 in the bank. It makes it hard to save $20,000. The other thing to know is that some benefits, like Medi-Cal, may be repayable in the future to the government. And so they can put a lien on a home to get their money back under certain circumstances. And there are avoidance techniques around that as well. So I want to talk a little bit about that asset limit dilemma I was just referring to. So with the $2,000 that individuals can have and the $3,000 that married couples can have. So you can get around it either by having money in a protected account like an IDA, which I referred to before, using gifted funds, so a family member is providing the down payment, so you don't have to worry about carrying the money in your bank account, or, as I said before, using a down payment assistance program so the bulk of the down payment is paid for by the down payment assistance program and you don't have to bring it to the table, thus you don't threaten your asset limit. Another way you can buy a home on a very limited income is through Section 8. So how many people, raise your hands in this room, are on Section 8? Okay, a good number. I'd say about 10, 15 people rose their hands. Okay, so one time back in a era that is bygone and that we can't really remember, the federal government got kind of progressive about Section 8. And they came up with this idea that, well, maybe we can let a Section 8 voucher holder use their entitlement to pay a bank instead of paying a landlord. So let's suppose you're on Section 8, you're renting a one-bedroom, and you're paying $350 a month of the portion of your rent. They said, why don't we let them buy a one-bedroom condo and let them use that $350 as a contribution towards a mortgage payment? So they came up with this great program called Section 8 Home Ownership, and we have been successful in putting probably almost a dozen people into their own homes who use this program. So these are people who are dealing with disability, who are on SEC, and who are collecting SSI. Most of them are not earning any other income. Yet they were able to buy their own homes. And this is how they did it. They basically converted their voucher into a mortgage payment. A very, very cool program. In order to do it, you need to have, there's mandatory training and financial counseling through the housing authority. And if you're disabled, the program lasts for the full 30 years of the first mortgage, and you don't need to be working. This program, by the way, is available if you're not dealing with disability, but you can only get it for 15 years, and you do need to be working on Section 8. But for purposes of us today, it's 30 years of mortgage subsidy, and it is there's no work requirement, and at the end of 30 years, you have paid the first mortgage off completely, and you're no longer on Section 8 at the end of 30 years, but you don't have a housing mortgage payment anymore, so it's okay. You own the house outright. All right. Some caveats, some important caveats. The program is not offered by all housing authorities. In fact, most housing authorities don't offer this. In my area, it is offered by the City of Oakland's Housing Authority and by the Housing Authority of the County of Alameda. But it is not offered by Berkeley or Alameda or Livermore or Contra Costa County, except for Pittsburgh. It's not offered those places. Now, I'm not familiar with your county up here, so for those of you from the Sacramento area, we need to do some further research, but it may or may not be offered. The other thing that is important to know about this program is that in order to use it, you must be a Section 8 renter. I get calls from people who want to get on the Section 8 home ownership program, and I ask them, are you on Section 8? And they say no. They're on a waiting list, or they haven't even applied. I can't help them, and no realtor could, because in order to start the process, they already have to have their voucher. So what the process is, you make contact with the Section 8 home ownership coordinator for the housing authority where you are or where you want to be. You attend all their required classes and counseling. And then after that, you'd be referred to a lender, one of their preferred lenders, who'd help you arrange arrange the financing and help you get your pre-approval letter. And then you would select a realtor to help you find a home. And they have a list of realtors, but because they're a government agency, they can't recommend anyone specifically. But they have a list of realtors they'd experience with using this program. And I strongly recommend, by the way, that if you get into this, you select a realtor who has some experience with it, because it's a complicated process and it involves dealing with the housing authority, and that's not for the faint of heart for any of you who've had experience dealing with the housing authority. Okay, a few things to remember about Section 8 home ownership. First of all, the voucher size is really important. The more bedrooms on your voucher, the stronger chance you'll have of making it work. The other thing is, even with this program and lower interest rates, finding an affordable home in a neighborhood you like is still going to be difficult. And you have to be really patient, because most of our Section 8 clients, it takes anywhere from 2 years or more from the start to when they get the keys. It's not something for the faint-hearted. You have to be very motivated, focused, and patient. And the other thing is, it's not that easy to make this work with foreclosures and short sales. The good news is that the quantity of distressed properties is going down fairly quickly from where it was at the worst of the housing crisis. So we're seeing more and more regular sales in the marketplace. All right. So the last thing I wanted to just touch on briefly is affordability. So let's suppose a hypothetical purchase price of $200,000, and you're gonna tap in. I'm just going to give you one example. You're going to tap in to a city-based down payment assistance, and you're going to have, let's say you're going to have a $10,000 gift from the family. And so I'm actually going to give you the numbers so you can have them for your record. $200,000 purchase price with a city down payment of program assistance that gives you $60,000, which is not unheard of at all. And let's suppose your family gives you $10,000 and you bring to the table $1,000. So on a $200,000 purchase price, you've put down $71,000, which means that you're going to be actually only having a loan of $139,000. Your total monthly payment in that scenario, based on a 4% interest rate, which is higher than what you can get right now, and based on a very conservative estimate for how much property taxes are going to be, I come to $933 a month. Now, in the Bay Area, where I am, $933 a month is a pretty good one-bedroom apartment rental rate. So the carrying cost of a small home competes very favorably right now with the cost of renting. And you don't need a lot of down payment to do it. So I wanted to finally, as the last thing, is talk to you a little bit about the kind of market we're in. Everyone always wants to know, how's the market, right? So the market right now has five basic characteristics that are really important for that we always talk to our buyers about. Number one, we're in a seller's market. A seller's market means the sellers have all the power. When I talk about the market, I'm talking primarily about the Bay Area, but this extends through much of the state too, and probably this area too. So a seller's market, the reason we have a seller's market is because there's not enough homes out there for people to buy. To give you an idea of how bad it is, at the top of the boom in the Bay Area, in the East Bay, not San Francisco City, but the East Bay, we had over 13,000 homes available on the market waiting for a buyer to come back in July of 2007. As of March 31st, there were about 1,800. So you can see that's a very, very low number. The market that we normally see when things are quote-unquote normal is about 5,000 to 8,000 homes available. So if you've got a scenario like that, you're going to get a lot of people bidding on the same houses and you're going to get a lot of multiple offer situations. I go to a sales meeting once a week at my office and agents say how many offers they got on their listings or how many offers they were bidding against, and it's typically a two-digit figure. So it makes it really, really difficult for somebody to buy a property in those circumstances if they've got a very heavily financed offer. The other factor in the market right now that's partly driving this problem is low interest rates. We are still near record low interest rates, and that's attracting a lot of people into the marketplace to buy homes because the cost of money is low. We also are observing, and this is statewide, 30% cash buyers. According to the California Association of Realtors. That means 3 out of every 10 offers is cash. And when you're a cash buyer, you normally don't have to do an appraisal and you normally don't have to get a loan. You don't have to get a loan at all, so there's no loan contingency, no appraisal contingency. So if you have 20 offers on the table and your offer is heavily financed and you need an appraisal and a loan and you offer $200,000 and the cash guy comes in at $190,000 or $185,000 and he's going to close in 2 weeks and he doesn't have an appraisal contingency or a loan contingency, it makes it hard for you to convince a seller to go with your offer. And this is what's makes it really tough for buyers in the market right now. The other thing that's changing, I talked to you at the beginning about these FHA loans being very popular. They're going to be a lot less popular because the government, as of April 1st, increased the fees on them, making them very expensive, not just to get at the beginning, but to carry in terms of the mortgage insurance premium that you have to pay as part of the monthly payment. So with that high fee associated with them, and that high carrying cost, the conventional loans with low down payments are going to become a viable alternative for many buyers, and these FHA loans are going to be used less, I think, in the marketplace, where a buyer can get away, can do it. So I am based in the Bay Area. I have a lot of resources that I share via Twitter, Facebook, my website, and a blog all about the housing market. And I also wanted to share with you that I'm on the City of Oakland Mayor's Commission on Persons with Disabilities. I'm the chairperson of the Mayor's Commission. And so I'm involved in disability advocacy in the East Bay. And I have cerebral palsy. It affects the way I walk. And I'm very, very motivated to help people dealing with disabilities to make their lives better in whatever way it works out, and around housing especially. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of these thoughts. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so. Yes.
Steve, I'm Mitch Pomerantz, and a lot of folks live in condominiums, including Donna and myself, and I'm the president of our board, and if I recall correctly, there's another issue with FHA loans, and that is that if you are looking at a condominium, the condo has to have a certain amount of money in its reserve account. And I believe that's correct because we're in the process of trying to get our reserves up to a point where potential buyers can, in fact, qualify for FHA loans. We're not quite there yet. But for folks, assuming that the information I was given is correct, for folks who are looking at condominiums, and there are big advantages, as far as I'm concerned, to being in a condo as opposed to a single-family home, that's something you may need to also consider. The other thing that we discovered when we bought 11 years ago, realtors who don't specialize in accessibility are trainable. We got very lucky with the husband and wife that we chose as realtors. We told them we needed to be in an area with good public transportation, with bus services. I was working at the time and commuting downtown. It was when they were putting in the Gold Line through into Pasadena, and they were fantastic. They drove us to all of the showings. So you can, if you work with a realtor in advance and do a little bit of training, they will work with you and they will accommodate your particular needs.
Thank you so much. I couldn't agree more. There are excellent real estate agents out there, and I encourage them to come to my presentation so they can be even more excellent in serving our community. And so I definitely agree with you there. And I'd never meant to imply that you can't train realtors, because I got trained at one point. But there are also real estate agents who don't understand this stuff, so you would take that on yourself to do that training. The second thing I wanted to respond very quickly about the FHA business is that it is very tough right now to buy a condominium using FHA financing unless the building's already been approved as an FHA quote-unquote projects. It used to be you could get what they call spot approvals. It used to be that if you wanted to do FHA financing, you were buying a condo, the lender doing the FHA loan could go inquire about the nature of the percentage of owner occupancy and the budget and the reserves, just like you talk about. And if it met those criteria, they could get what they call a spot approval. But now, they don't offer that. And so unless the building is already an FHA approved building, our FHA buyers are really restricted in the condo selections they have in the communities where they want to live. So an FHA loan to buy a condo is becoming a rare thing indeed, and that's a very, very true what you just said.
Okay, I won't push buttons. You're right. It seems to... Oh, there I go. Stephen, if people can't afford to buy and they must rent, do you have advice for them on how, and I don't even know if it's possible, to find a realtor to help a person find rental property?
That is an excellent question. The short answer is no. I get this question all the time, and what I'm trying to do is to start promoting accessible rentals on my blog and my Facebook page whenever I hear about them. I do a lot of work with the Center for Independent Living in Berkeley, and once a month they do a housing workshop where people who are looking for rentals, who need affordable and sometimes accessible rentals, they go to those workshops, and the Berkeley folks give them lists and lists and lists of different nonprofit agencies and housing projects that are available or sometimes have waiting lists. But it's really tough to find accessible rentals or even affordable rentals, especially in the Bay Area right now, because rental market is going bonkers.
I'm just going to do a plug here. Stephen Beard helped my husband Steve and I found our condo, and we recommend him to everybody. I know that's why we wanted him here, so he could be recommended to here and everybody in our streaming land throughout the world.
Thank you, Judy. That's very kind.
I think we might have time for one more question, eh?
you stand if you have a question or raise your hand really high? Oh, over there? Okay.
When you do go and show houses to people, another thing is when they have a lot of steps, how do you handle it with your disability?
Wow, that's a great question. I use a cane, and I don't like steps, but I'm able to handle them, at least so far. I don't like to show homes that have 50 stairs to get up to the home. I've seen a few of those. They're more in the city than in Oakland and Berkeley, where I am. But I'm able to manage. But if my client, I mean, one of the parts of the part of the process is learning what your client's needs are. So obviously, if it isn't going to work for my client, then I won't be able to show them the home. But I can manage stairs. So if my client is looking at places that have steps and that's something that would fit with their needs, I can make, there's no problem for me to show them property.
You know, in one of our pioneers in this organization is a guy named Bob Campbell. And he built his own house. He was a totally blind man. Built his own house in the Berkeley Hills, and he told me there were 200 steps on his property.
Wow.
Let's see. Are there any other questions, or I think we might be done.
No, there's two more. Let me get you on the mic so you're recorded.
What was that again?
I actually work as a lender here locally, and I remember another program that's 100% financing, but it might not be practical for you guys. That's a USDA program. It's 100% financing, and you can finance your closing costs, and you can use a gift on that as well. But the only downfall of that is accessibility. It has to be rural. You have to be up
El
Dorado Hills or north, or maybe out by Loomis or Lincoln. So that might be something. Or if you have maybe somebody else in your household that is sighted, that gives you a right.
Farmers Home Administration used to be, I think.
So anyway, that's another 100% program out there, but you just have to consider the accessibility because the key program that is you're in a rural area, so buses might be hard.
I want to thank...
Use your mic back.
I want to thank Stephen, and it's clear to me that he's a man who knows his Freddy from his Fanny.
Ba-dum-bum.
And let's have a big hand for Stephen. We're going to do a door prize? Okay, let's do a door prize, guys. Have Stephen do the... Stephen draws it out, it'll come with a Section 8 voucher with it or something.
Yes.
We have a bag of fudge.
What am I drawing for?
Bag of fudge.
Bag of fudge coming, folks. Bag of fudge.
From Our Lady in Berkeley, Katrina. Alice McGrath. Are you here? I think she is. Any more, Madam Chair? Okay, so we thank Stephen. And according to my program, the next item is a report on Muttstrut. And I would like to, I think I'm supposed to give it back to the President at this point. Is that correct, Madam President? All right.
Thank you. You are.
We are juggling up here. All right. The next item on our agenda, excuse me, as I cough too, sympathy coughs here.